Yes, the live show on UK Health Radio. I'm Robin Daly, host for the show and founder of Yes to Life, the UK's integrative cancer care charity, supporting people with cancer in learning about and accessing lifestyle and complementary medicine approaches with the potential to improve quality of life and outcomes. A key feature of the experience of many with cancer in recent years has been the rise of online discussion groups, forums for exchange of ideas and resources, and for mutual support. Always Hope Support is one such established group, and today I'm talking to its founder, award-winning Linda Sinclair. Hi Linda, wonderful to have you as my guest on the Yes Life show.
Thank you very much, thanks for the invite.
So it's not before time. I have to start by saying that you're an enormously loved member of the community of people with cancer who are supporting each other in finding the best way forward. In fact, so much so, you've been nominated for and won the Yes to Life Humanitarian Award, which is given for compassion in action to those who bring humanity, dignity and deep care to people at their most vulnerable. So there's some pretty stiff competition for that award out there. So the fact you won it says an awful lot about your commitment and care.
Thank you very much. I'm still sort of in shock. It's not sunk in yet. Yeah, it was an amazing night. Fabulous. It was really, really good.
It was a wonderful event, that gala, wasn't it? Yeah. And yeah. It was so great to see all these people being acknowledged for what they're doing. Because I don't think we really got anything like it in terms of an award in this sector. And, you know, there's so much great work being done. So many amazing people. It was actually wonderful to be able to say so.
Yeah, it was great to get everybody in the same room because we also have other things going on. So that's it's nice to be able to actually all get together and connect and chat and, yeah, catch up.
Yeah, fabulous. Yeah. Okay, so while I'm very aware of the esteem that you're currently held in, I really don't know much at all about the backstory, the why behind it all, and I'd love to. So what set you out on this path and when?
Right, so it all began back in April 2016, and my then husband, Dave, came down with some symptoms. Unbeknown to us, his extreme exhaustion, loss of appetite, was actually diagnosed initially as just anemia.
Right.
So we didn't initially panic about it, but then he used to play badminton quite competitively and he was finding that he just could not play. He couldn't, he was running, if he tried to run, he was feeling sick and it was getting to the point where we thought, no, this is more than just anemia.
Right.
So he went back to the doctors and we pushed for some more blood tests and it came back stage 4 pancreatic cancer.
Right.
So that was a real shock. Naively, I didn't know a great deal about pancreatic at the time. And my own experience of cancer had been my mum's diagnosis back in 1991. She had breast cancer, which was caught early.
Right.
So in my naivety, I'm thinking, well, we're 30-odd years on. We'll have made progress. You know, there's lots that can be done. And in that very first appointment that we went to with the oncologist, we were basically told, go home, make your funeral plans. And the horrible words that they used were, it will find a way.
Yeah.
So that wasn't the best first meeting with the oncologist.
It definitely wasn't the best, but all too common a style of meeting, unfortunately.
So obviously after the initial shock, I thought, well, there's got to be other things we can be doing. He'd agreed he was going to do chemotherapy because obviously, as we all do naively, just think that's the answer and we're going to get cured and let's do the chemo. So he agreed to do the chemotherapy. And it was about 6 weeks before he actually got his first appointment to go. So in the meantime, I started researching, thinking, well, this can't just be it. And initially went down the cannabis route because my hairdresser's sister had actually cleared her stage 4 lymphoma with cannabis oil after the chemo failed.
Mm.
And it was one of those things where you don't take a great deal of notice until it kind of hits
until you. Until it's very relevant, yes.
So having never, ever taken drugs, done anything, didn't know where to start, I thought, right, I need to get in touch with her. So did that, found out she was having it sent over from Canada. So I just thought, I've no choice. I'm going to have to do this. It's my starting point. So I registered with the company. We had it sent over from Canada. And amazingly, Dave was doing really well because I was researching other things as well. We were doing cold press juicing, coffee enemas, supplements. And at the first scan appointment, once we got the first scan results, 80% of his cancer had gone.
Flipping heck. That was a result, wasn't it?
I know. And the oncologist just said to us, basically, whatever you're doing, keep doing it, because it's been a miracle.
All right.
So the primary had almost gone. It was only very, very tiny. He had metastases in the spleen, metastases in the bones and the liver, and everything was reducing massively. So we continued what we were doing. And then it came to his next scan and the primary was no longer visible on the scan and we'd had further reductions. So the oncologist decided, I think it's time for a little break, because there was hardly any cancer still showing on the scans. Now, the unfortunate thing, which I think was possibly the turning point, was Dave developed a hernia, which I now hear is quite common with a lot of treatments, weakening the, in that area.
Oh, really?
So we made the decision to have the hernia repaired on his chemo break. But then when we came to get the next scan done before treatment commenced again, he had a new lesion on the scar, on the wound site.
Right.
And now in hindsight, I'm thinking maybe the surgery wasn't a good thing at that point. And he was in a lot of pain with the hernia, more than the cancer, because the cancer was regressing so much. So we did the surgery. And
you can easily see why you would choose to do that. But
yeah. So to alleviate the pain. But then I think he had an issue with the mesh afterwards. So he was having as much pain after the surgery as he was before.
Oh, no. So it wasn't even worth
doing. No. So he kind of took himself off to bed quite a lot. And then it wasn't so much the cancer that was bothering him. It was the pain from the hernia. And he spent a lot of time in bed. They prescribed him morphine for the pain, which wasn't the pain from the cancer. It was the pain from the surgery.
Right.
And he spent so much time in bed, he actually developed pneumonia. So one day started to bring up what they call the coffee beans, coffee grounds. It was obviously blood that was coming up, I think. And we had to rush him to hospital. And they started to give him treatment. They were giving him antibiotics IV. And we thought it was all going to sort of be resolved and they were going to deal with the pneumonia. But then I think they went away, I'm guessing, but I think they went away and read his notes and then they came back to me and said, can we have a do not resuscitate order? We've got a stage 4 pancreatic cancer patient here with pneumonia. And I was like, well, we want to fight this. You know, I don't want to sign a DNR. But they were pushing and pushing and then they made a decision to withdraw his antibiotics.
Wow.
So it was kind of taken out of my hands. And I tried to push for it and they were saying, well, we think it's in his best interest. And so then the next thing I know, he's being whisked off to a ward. We said we want to admit him. And then I was taken into a side room with my mum was there and his children were there. And basically, when we went to the ward, he wasn't conscious again. And they said, we've given him something to help him settle. Well, I think I know what that meant. And he passed away 5 hours later. I never got to speak to him again.
Wow. What a story, eh?
Yeah.
And what do you think about that whole in his best interest scenario where the decision was taken out of your hands?
At the time, I was so distraught. I wasn't even asked about it. They'd already done it before I reached the ward.
Amazing, eh?
Yeah.
Amazing. Mm.
Yeah, so after the initial shock from going from having like hardly any cancer left to them dying of pneumonia, it just felt like there was so much more that could be done. And I wasn't going to kind of just walk away from it. I just thought, no, our experience and his death has got to mean something. So I decided it needed purpose. So initially, because we had such success with the cannabis oil and I knew there was potential there, my initial thought was I need to fight for legalization, because obviously I was able to access it from Canada, but it did stop working at one point and I needed to change strains. As I was learning, I realized I needed to change strains. I had no access. I didn't know who to contact. And I did start actually growing my own plants in desperation. I literally went to the hydroponic shop and just said, look, my husband's dying of cancer. Can you help me? So that was how desperate I was. We never got to the point where we used them because he passed away before I could use them. And then I thought, I don't want someone else to be in the position that I've been in. And obviously because of the legalities, I wanted to try and fight for legalization.
Makes sense, yeah.
Which is where it all began,
yeah.
on cannabis use. I met patients down in Parliament. It did get reclassified from Class A to Class B, but we never actually got the full legalization of it.
No, it's a mess still, isn't it? What an amazing story. Well, I can completely relate to your situation, and it's parallels my own of actually trying to make sense out of a horrible loss.
Yeah.
And it, funnily enough, it sort of does that job. I mean, it never makes up for the loss, but it does actually confuse you into, in my case, I find my life is so changed by it all that I'd never go back to where I was before, but doesn't mean I wanted the loss either. But so it's a bit confusing, but it is certainly something good has come out of a bad situation.
Yeah. So, I mean, obviously, once I'd initially done the cannabis campaigning and we realised we got to a point where we couldn't go any further with it, I thought there's got to be much, much more, because we were doing cold press juicing and supplements and all this kind of thing.
Yeah.
So that's when I didn't really use the internet too much when I was researching for Dave, because I didn't feel there was a lot of groups and information online. Obviously, I hadn't discovered places like PubMed at that point, Frontiers to look at studies. So I decided during lockdown, actually, to start looking more online, trying to research more and trying to expand my knowledge. And initially found Jane McClellan's group.
Oh, yeah.
So I connected with Jane and we had a few chats during lockdown. We phoned each other and I became more interested in what she was doing, read her book, and started answering questions in her group. It took a couple of reads to understand the book because it was quite complex.
I bet it did.
Yeah. I think I was out with a highlighter pen and I think it was about the third read.
Yeah.
The light bulb went on and I thought, oh, I think I get this.
Jane says it's all very simple, but it's simple for her.
Yeah, yeah. She's done
it it's the way I look at it.
And she's so clever.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But anyway, you obviously take to this stuff a bit like a duck to water. Nonetheless, you're very naturally drawn to research, it seems. I mean, you know, some people it's just like, well, they can't even begin. But
yeah,
you just roll out the sleeves and got on with it for your husband and subsequently. And that's, of course, you know, everybody needs people like you who are prepared to pull together important information and synthesize it and simplify it and all this stuff, so that they can actually assimilate it
Fairly
easily, because it's difficult stuff. It can be. Not many people are going to get into PubMed, are they?
No.
No.
I think it was, I was actually on the final year of my degree when Dave was diagnosed. So I was doing an OU degree in English literature.
Okay, a bit different.
Yeah, yeah. But I think because of having to do so much reading and extract the relevant information.
Right.
I think it kind of helps. And because I did my degree quite late as well, he didn't make it to my graduation, unfortunately. He passed away the month before, but he knew that I passed. I got a first class.
Wow.
So I decided, well, why not use that in a positive way and use it for researching? Because I know when we were going through the diagnosis, the stress was unbearable and you're sort of trying to think straight, as you'll know yourself.
Yeah.
It's so difficult to think.
It is.
So I decided I would try and do the research for people and then try and explain it in layman's terms. So I set up my Facebook group during lockdown.
Yeah.
And just started basically with bits of information.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
If you see the letters AIDA, do you immediately think of the opera by Verdi? AIDA is also an advertising acronym for those iconic Mad Men days. A is for attention, I is for interest, D is for desire, A is for action. This process is a timeless truism for making a sale. Fortunately, if your product or service is health-related, we can offer you guaranteed access to a global audience with a high interest in health, healthy lifestyle and contemporary well-being. UKHealthRadio.com has a regular monthly audience of around 1.5 million health-conscious people. And Health Triangle, its award-winning monthly magazine, has around 20,000 paying subscribers. Find out more about both at UKHealthRadio.com. Let's all put health first.
Hey, are you tired of the irritation you get down there from pads and other bladder weakness products? Tennis Sensitive Care Pads are the first ever bladder weakness pads enriched with a skin comfort formula. The skin-friendly layer in combination with the soft, 100% breathable materials helps protect intimate skin from irritation. And as always, you have triple protection from leaks, odor, and moisture. Gynecologist tested and dermatologically approved by the Skin Health Alliance. Look for Tena Sensitive Care Pads with the Skin Comfort Formula online and in stores now.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
Kind of grew and grew and grew. We got to 22,000 people.
Certainly did.
Yeah. And then Facebook closes down.
Yeah, excellent. Yeah, well, that's what Facebook does. But you're back. And
yeah, came back, yeah.
You've got this thriving group there. I'm sure many of the people who are in it are probably going to be listening to this. But it's also, you've got it backed up by your own websites as well, which the two things together add up to a massive storehouse of knowledge.
Yeah.
They're both go under the banner of Always Hope. And I often spend a little time exploring the conflicting ideas around hope, as it's been a kind of bone of contention for years.
Yeah.
Conventional oncologists accusing all other practitioners of peddling false hope. So you're out there brazenly encouraging people to always hope.
Yes.
So how do you support this in the face of criticism?
Well, I think if you haven't got hope, what have you got? You've got nothing, have you?
I agree.
And the problem I've had is because I'm not got a medical background, I needed to be taken seriously. And I have been criticised. I've been criticised by a UK integrative doctor, believe it or not, which was really disappointing, concerned that I didn't have a qualification. But I do have the support of professionals. So I felt like I've had to kind of prove myself in that respect that I don't have medical background or a medical degree, but that doesn't mean you can't read and research and understand. And if you haven't got any hope, then you have nothing. So I try to keep not just researching, but also supporting and encouraging the brilliant community of people we've got in the group to support mentally as well.
Right.
Because I know so many people in the group struggle mentally. So we try and sort of keep that hope going. And I do have professionals in the group as well who support me and teach me. So I'm quite lucky. They've kind of taken me under their wing.
Yeah. Well, I'm completely with you. I think, yeah, you say hope and life are almost synonymous. Say, if you don't have any hope, you really don't have any life.
No.
So, Yeah, I mean, it feels to me like oncologists have moved over the years from, they used to make it up and just say, you'll be fine, Mrs. Smith. You know, they didn't even tell people. But they've gone from there to the other end of the spectrum where they feel it's their duty to lay out the facts as they see it.
Yeah.
And of course, they're not facts at all. They're just statistics. And they don't take anything into account or any concept that the patient could actually make a big effort to skew the statistics in their favor. So, it's brutal stuff. And both approaches, to me, are to avoid genuine interchange on a personal level with the patient and to keep yourself at arm's length.
Yes.
And not to have to deal with the difficulty of the situation emotionally.
Yeah. I mean, after Dave passed away, I actually called a meeting with PALS.
Oh, yeah.
And I had the oncologist in there and there was other heads of departments. And I felt I needed to tell them their failings to try and change things for other people. Now, whether that's made any difference, I've no idea. But I wanted to explain to them how they made a patient feel.
Well, good for you. You've got to try.
Yeah, it was kind of like stage four, you're written off.
Mm.
And how brutal they were with us. And they were kind of saying, we have to be realistic. So I said, there's a difference between being realistic and being so brutal in what you say to people, because we have to go away after you've said that and deal with the consequences of your words. So, yeah, I think a lot more sensitivity is needed.
It's not a strong point in oncology, sensitivity.
No.
I don't know if you come across our charter for oncology, but we're calling for this kind of thing. It's not a change in what they do, a change in how they do it.
Yes.
And it's so desperately needed. It's a brutal environment. And of course, not just brutal for the patients, it's brutal for them as well. They're existing in this brutal environment all the time where they're actually not allowed to be very human. And of course, that's not only bad for patients, it's bad for them too. So it desperately needs to change. It's completely out of date. It's a comes from, sort of a carry-on doctor film era that really is just so out of date in modern society that people are behaving in that way. It's just, anachronism. Anyway.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, you have lots of great quotes on your website. The one which I've heard before about accept your diagnosis but reject your prognosis. Very wise words.
Yeah.
Because if you don't accept your diagnosis, well, you're in la-la land probably, and you won't respond appropriately. But the prognosis is made up.
Yes.
Of course, it's a guess.
It is. Nobody can predict how long anybody's got. And it's everybody's situation is different. We're all doing different things. So it's basically this prognosis is based on you've got this prognosis if you do nothing, you've got this prognosis if you do standard of care, and there's your two choices, and that's our calculation. Well,
yeah,
it doesn't work like that in reality,
Fortunately.
Yeah, fortunately, yeah. Yeah. And people are becoming more aware now that they have more choice.
Mm-hmm.
They're still afraid of telling their doctors a lot of what they're doing.
Yeah.
Because there's the fear that they'll stop treatment or they'll stop their bloods and scans, which I am actually seeing, which is really disappointing that people are using other clinics abroad. And I know that oncologists have got a duty of care, but to deny people scans and bloods, I think it's really sad to see that happening.
Yeah, it's very sad to see that happening. When it's being denied by oncologists here, I wonder whether that's actually legal.
Yeah.
They can take a taxpayer who's been paying for their NHS care and say, oh, you can't have any because you're not doing exactly what we say you should do. I think it's probably illegal. It hasn't been challenged as yet.
Yeah,
but
it needs challenging.
It probably needs to be.
Because at the end of the day, it's our choice. It's our body, our choice.
Absolutely right. The NHS charter's got it written all over it, how patients should be at the centre of their care and all their choices taken into account of them and their family.
Yeah.
So, forget about just booting them out because you don't like their choices. That's
exactly.
Absolutely not it.
Yeah. I had seen it in the US a lot over the last few years, but it's only recently started happening here, and it's sort of kind of like we're going towards the US way of thinking. Because they're with the insurance, they they get the choice whether they take a patient on and vice versa.
Right. It is a different
scenario. I do know a lot of, I know a lot of people in my group have said, I don't want treatment, but I want monitoring. And they've basically been shown the door by the oncologist and said, you need to find another oncologist because if you're not going to do chemo, I don't want to take you on.
Yeah. Well, it is a different scenario there, and it has some reasonable basis there. But here, when the health service is a public service, I don't think it does.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah. Anyway, another quote that's on your website I like is, evaluate your life and open your mind to new ways of healing. Just because it isn't conventional doesn't mean it doesn't work. Now, I want to unpack that one a little bit because I do think it's really important.
Yeah.
You know, the conventional world would have us believe that without a mountain of randomized controlled trials, any approach is considered unproven, dangerous quackery. So, you know, this is actually so far from the truth that it's laughable. I mean, the majority of conventional medicines don't measure up to these standards, for starters. What this thinking, of course, leads on to is efforts to hold back progress ongoingly until the point at which it's simply not possible for them to do that anymore.
Yes.
You sort of see that eventually detractors are going to have to cave into the fact that something like IV vitamin C is extraordinarily safe and helps an enormous number of people with cancer.
Yeah.
But, of course, the fact is, we've known that for 50 years. And that help has been available to a very small number of people. They're sort of pioneers, if you looked outside the box. While millions and millions of people with cancer have been deprived of the option for 50 years. I mean, it's huge. What vitamin C on its own could have done for patients with cancer.
Yeah, it's terrible.
So rant over, you say what you think.
No, I agree. I mean, there's so many things out there, like you say, that are proven. They've been studied. The results are there. But they just, you know, we need progress. We need things to be changed because the results are out there. People just say, oh, it's anecdotal. But, I mean, we're seeing it. You know, it's not just a couple of people. It's tens of thousands of people.
There's great evidence for vitamin C. Often the thing that's completely ignored in all of this, and it drives me nuts, is, of course, the case that nearly everything in integrative medicine, not everything, but most things in integrative medicine are immune-supportive approaches, which they don't have side effects and they promote good health.
Yeah.
Now, to infer that these are dangerous because they haven't been through randomized controlled trials is absolute nonsense, and it's just a ploy to keep them out. And basically, you know, anything that shows some promise and is as safe as, say, IV vitamin C, well, it's worth a go, for God's sake. You know, when you're dying of cancer,
absolutely,
you want to save your life.
Yeah, you don't want to
be politically correct. You're trying to save your life. When you know that kind of stuff, you have a man or a woman standing in front of you who's supposed to be saving your life, they're not interested in this stuff. Well, you have to conclude, oh, they don't care about me. That has to be your natural conclusion. If they won't sanction something which is safe and which could help, then they're displaying a lack of care.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
If optimizing your health and well-being is on your to-do list, then let Revive Active, Ireland's number one super supplement brand, help you achieve that in the most convenient and comprehensive way possible. Clean, premium ingredients scientifically formulated to work in synergy to support immunity, energy, joints, heart health, sleep, emotional balance, and more. Benefit from the power, purity, and positivity of our award-winning powder sachets or our therapeutic capsule range. Use code RADIO15 at reviveactive.com and save 15% off today. Super supplements for a super you.
When you vacation with Norwegian Cruise Line, every day is a new day. Get a taste for Barcelona, then savor incredible dining options back on board one day. Connect to ancient history in Athens, and then disconnect completely in our spa another day. Wherever the sea breeze takes you, come aboard and experience a different tomorrow with NCL. Visit ncl.com, call your travel agent, or call 0333-336-1472. Norwegian Cruise Line, Ships Registry, the Bahamas and USA.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Look, we haven't got long left, and you haven't yet told us about all the things that you offer. I'd love it if you summarised them for people who don't know you and what you do.
So the aim of the group was to obviously research, find things that can help. But then my idea was, well, if we know about them, but then we can't access them, what is the point? So I've been connecting with people like Daniel from MCS, Arpan, from Art of Healing in India. And we've obviously been trying to make things available for people. So I've been working with Arpan, who also owns Onkstore, and he's very, very kindly been compounding off-label meds that we need. He's making them available. And we've had problems getting some of the off-labels into European countries. So again, we've been looking at ways of how we can get things through customs, because people are really frustrated that they know these things are out there, but how do we get them? So he's kindly employed a compound pharmacist, and they're now compounding ivermectin, mebendazole. We've started the first two, and we just trialled them into 10 countries in powder form, because powder form has different legalities of sending things in a capsule, which sounds really crazy.
It is crazy, yes, but anyway, I can believe it.
Yeah, but because they can be used for labs, we can. So we're working together now, and we've managed to get so far, I think it's 6 European countries we've gotten through customs. So we're working now to just make things accessible for people. So there's no point in them being there if you can't get hold of them. And obviously, a lot of countries, you can't get things into the country. So that's our main aim at the moment, is trying to get off labels into as many countries as we can. We've got now into Australia and Canada and the US. They don't seem as problematic. Europe seems worse.
Great.
So that's been a big focus at the moment, to try and get these meds in.
Mm-hmm. And tell me more about the research side and all the information that you share.
Right. So I research and put everything into the Facebook group for free. And I also have a website, which is kind of my backup site for if Facebook take me down again.
Yeah, right.
So I have a subscription-based website, which I just keep it to a small fee. It's £20 for 6 months. And the information is, I think it's more organised on the website, because Facebook, you can't actually, half the time you can't find what you're looking for.
It's not built for
the searching really, is difficult. And so I research, put everything onto the Facebook for free. And then people, if they want to, can join and subscribe to the website. But I think it's got to be fair. I think not everybody can afford to pay for everything. So I try and balance it and have as much information on the Facebook group as I can.
Right.
And then for those that want, I do actually do research for people, so they can book with me and I will research. I have researched some complex cancers, like quite rare cancers. So I try to put as much information of the, I wouldn't say common cancers, but they're more, the cancers that are out there, that there's more people diagnosed. I try and put as much information I can on the Facebook page, so that people don't have to pay to come through me.
Right.
But the service is there. If somebody's got a very rare cancer, or they've got lots of mutations and they need things researching, I offer like a research option as well.
Right. Okay. The thing that's kind of glaringly obvious about you and your work is how much people love you.
No, thank you.
I mean, it is out there in space. Now, I wonder, do you think you're able to say why this is? What is it about what you do, or the way that you do it, that the people appreciate so very much?
I think it's because I've been there. I do genuinely know how it feels.
Right.
And I don't turn people away. I never ignore a message, ever. No matter what it is, I had somebody contact me a few months ago at midnight, and luckily I was on my phone in bed, which I shouldn't be, but and they were feeling suicidal, and they reached out to me, and I answered. I just thought, I can't ignore this, so I don't ignore anybody. I'll always answer. So whether it's because I've just answered at 12 o'clock at night or Sunday afternoon, or, you know, I think that maybe that's what it is. I probably need to put restrictions in place for my own mental health, but I find it so difficult to say no.
Well, what about that? I mean, obviously everyone has their limits, and there's more and more people out there with cancer, unfortunately.
Yeah.
That obviously, you could easily reach a stage where it wasn't possible for you to do that. Personally, how do you feel that you managed for this? Because a lot of people would see it as a huge weight that you're carrying, and maybe you don't see it like that.
Yeah, some days, if it's been a long day and it's been a heavy day and we've had, you know, bad news, it does weigh down on you. And some days I think, you know, why am I doing this? And then strangely enough, I may have had 2 emails where somebody's, you know, not had some good news. And then suddenly I get this amazing email from somebody who's had amazing success. And it's kind of weird how they kind of come at the same time.
All right.
And I think, yes, that's why I'm doing this. And you think, well, there's not enough people doing it. There's great people out there, but I think there's not enough people who will commit to it, because it is demanding, as you know, and time consuming. And you've really got to believe in it and be dedicated to it. So, yeah, I just think I can't see a point where I would say that's enough, I'm done, I'm stopping doing it.
Right.
Because there's so many people need help. So I can't visualize that at the moment, but I know I need to put things in place to think, well, I need to take some time out, you know. It's difficult.
So obviously so far it's a bit of a lone journey you're taking. Do you think there are people maybe within your group already who might want to step up and actually help you do what you do?
Yeah, I mean, that'd be good. I mean, my admins, I have asked the admins, and they're great. They do help where they can. So they're learning as they go along, and I see them answering some of the questions that I've answered previously. But it would be nice to be able to have more support in that respect, because I'm managing the website, the group. Obviously, I've got admin to do and emails and stuff. So it'd be nice for someone else who wants to learn.
Yeah.
Because it's taken me 7-8 years to learn what I know now.
Yeah.
And I've been lucky to be helped by professionals. So, it'd be nice if somebody wanted to participate more.
Yeah, I'm sure it would.
But, yeah.
It'll probably happen. Obviously, you get to know and love people, and you lose them regularly. That's par for the course in this territory, which is hard. There's no doubt about it, it's hard. But as you say, there's also the other side, which is happening all the time, which is that people can be so amazingly grateful that anybody's interested in their situation, you know, where they're feeling totally isolated. I think so. It's fantastic what you're doing. I mean, if you were to tell somebody what your job was, how would you describe it? What do you do?
I just basically say I support cancer patients and I help them with research. So I suppose, I don't know whether I'm a coach or whether a researcher. I just say my job is research.
A bit of each, sounds like to me. Yeah, yeah, amazing. And are you managing to fit all this in and earn a crust sufficient to get you by? Because, you know, that most people have that obstacle to overcome. Maybe you don't need to.
Yeah, I mean, I was quite lucky, because when I remarried and moved to Bristol, when I met Mark, I obviously wasn't, I'd stopped working at that point, because obviously I was caring for my husband full time. So I had the time to do that, and I was quite fortunate that Mark was able to support me so that I could stay at home and do this, because it became a full-time job. So now I do have an income from what I do, but I like to pay it back. So I kind of, if somebody needs help and they're on a low income, I'll refund their protocol money.
I can tell. Yeah. You're that kind of person. That's why I'm wondering about you getting by.
Yeah, and I felt guilty because I was asked to do protocols and research for quite a few years and it didn't sit well with me. So I was saying, no, I'm not doing it. And a lot of people in America were saying, well, we pay an absolute fortune here.
Right.
to get anybody to research. So I said, well, okay, I'll do it. But I kept the price as low as I could. And what I do is I gift back. So I take out what I need for me to live. And then I'll buy supplements for somebody. Or we had an elderly lady who was working on her phone and her eyesight wasn't great.
Right.
So we got her a laptop.
Amazing.
It's giving back. I take need and then it kind of goes back to the community.
Amazing. So great. Yeah. Well, you know, it's no wonder to me that you've got such a big fan club. All right. Well, look, that's all we've got time for. It's been really nice to talk to you. Good to find out a bit more about you. Congratulations again on an amazing award, which
you
clearly completely deserve. And it's been a real pleasure to talk today.
Thank you, Robin. Before I go, could I just say, when we brought the award back, we were going to Shetland to see my brother.
Right.
And had to fly to London and then fly back to Aberdeen to get the ferry. And the award was in Mark's bag and he got stopped at customs.
Yeah.
And was asked, have you got a sharp object in your bag? And he was like, no. And he went, something's come up on the scan. And so he had to open it and he was like, well, what's this? And he had to explain it. And I was talking to my mum, so I didn't hear all this. And they were like, so what award was this? What's this for? And he was getting asked all the questions.
Hilarious.
Luckily they gave it back.
Very good.
Thank you so much. It was an amazing event. Thank you.
All right. Okay.
Take care, Robin.
Thanks, Linda. Bye-bye.
Thank you.
You can find out more about Linda and her work at always-hope.co.uk and her group operates on Facebook as Always Hope Support, /new. After the enormous success of our spring online conference, What's Really Working, we've teamed up again with Mark Taylor of Patient-Led Oncology to develop our autumn in-person conference that will be in Euston, London on the 27th of September. It goes under the same title, but it's much more UK-focused and, as regulars have come to expect, features a stellar lineup of speakers, namely Sophie True, Dr. Jamie Hossack, Jay McClelland, Dr. Arian Tavakoli, Professor Joe Neal, Sylvie Beljanski, Dr. Sally Moorcroft, Dr. Siegfried Trefzer, Dr. Emma Davies and Dr. James LaPorta. Topics covered will include psychedelic medicines in cancer, intravenous treatments at home, enhancing conventional treatments with repurposed drugs, UK integrative clinics, breathwork and meditation, and more. As usual, there'll be an extensive exhibition of suppliers and practitioners to meet and opportunities to interact directly with our speakers. We aim to keep the cost of our conferences as low as possible to maximise access for cash-strapped people with cancer, and this event is no exception, with an entry fee of just £55 that covers the whole day, including food and refreshments, as well as access to the recordings afterwards. To find out more and to book, go to the Yes Life website, which is yestolife.org.uk, and look under the events menu. Thanks for listening today. I hope you can join me again next week for another edition of the Yes to Life show here on UK Health Radio. Goodbye. Thank you.
Thank you.